Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. We made it to Friday. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. You look fantastic.
Happy
today.
Good Friday to everybody.
I like it.
Passover,
thank you very much.
For some, so happy Good Friday, everybody.
I did four shows this week with Nick Wright, and then on Friday, Vanilla Ice showed up. Uh-huh. Ice Baby, DJ Khaled.
I like his name? Khaled.
I knew what you
that too.
His younger brother, his little son,
adorable.
His son's the star of the family.
Anyway, it's a good look. Happy holidays to everyone celebrating this weekend. We have a big Friday show. The Los Angeles Lakers have a new reason to worry about signing another star. Ben Simmons, boy, he bounced back in a big way. We're going to start the program off with the Golden State Warriors. As predicted, the Warriors would not let Game 2 define them, you know, when they blew a 31-point lead to the Clippers in the loss. And as predicted, Kevin Durant would not let Patrick Beverley render him useless, you know, the way he had done in Games 1 and 2. Game 3 last night, all Warriors, 132-105 was your final. Warriors taking the win. Kevin Durant, 38 points in 30 minutes of play. After the game, vintage KD was asked if he had anything to prove.
I've been in for 12 years, and I'm 30. I don't need to show nobody nothing at this point.
He was aggressive from the start at both ends. He attacked. He said it yesterday, he's Kevin Durant. And so he showed everybody who Kevin Durant is.
Okay, over the last month or so, you've been, you know, pass first, been distributor for the team.
That's not true.
That's not?
No, I don't pass up shots. I just play within the offense.
Oh, I say, okay. Well, you've been more of a distributor. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, just because we play.
Okay, that's why. Tonight, you wasn't, right?
Yeah, because Coach called more plays for me to start.
Okay, so moving forward, do you think that it'll be a game-by-game basis as far as how you approach the game?
Look, I don't run the show. Any team I've ever been a part of, I'm just a player. I'm one of the guys, you know what I'm saying? So whatever my coach needs me to do, no matter what it is, I just got to go out there and be prepared for it mentally and physically. So tonight, no different.
All right, CeCe, how much did KD need a game like last night?
I don't think that he needed the game because he's got a tremendous reputation. He's a natural scorer of the basketball. But it's very, very important when you start getting into series that your best players play well. Now, KD said something in the press conference that I don't necessarily agree with. When he said, I don't have anything to prove, internally, you have something to prove to yourself. That's why you're out there playing the game. He's a lover of basketball, and he has a problem sometime with some of the other things that come with being an NBA star. So I thought last night he was going to have a good game. I didn't think that Patrick Beverley could continue, and I didn't think the NBA would allow Patrick Beverley basically to mug him, basically hand-checking, clutching, all the things that Doc Rivers really thrived at in the NBA when he played in a lot bigger than Patrick Beverley, but that was his style. And that's what he teaches. And those tactics defensively, that's why part of the reason why Kevin Durant was upset was because no one else in the league is being guarded that way. Unless you're a big guy in the paint, they're going to allow you to get away with more things. But Patrick Beverley in game one, game two, they allowed him to play 80s defense on Kevin Durant. It did get into his head. But Steve Kerr did what most good coaches do. You have to help out your star players. Yeah, there's a lot of basketball that's one-on-one. You can clear it out. But they all need help. Steph needs help. All right? Klay needs help. And KD needed help. And what they did for him, especially early in the game, was they made it. It was a priority for him to post up. But they weren't going to throw the ball directly into the post. What they did was put him in the low post, put Andrew Bogut in the starting lineup, put him in the low post, and had another 7-1 guy screen for him coming across the lane. So then he got a little bit of space, and you could see once he was getting the ball, he was going to dribble one or two times and get his shot up. That's what Kevin Durant does. So Steve Kerr did what good coaches do. You have to still be able to help your star players out because most sports, they're not one-on-one battles. You do have one-on-one battles within the scheme, but give me some help. As Kevin Durant said, typically, I used to be able to predict when I was going to have a great game. Based on the game plan, based on the philosophy of what the coaches were trying to do. And then last night, Steve Kerr helped his star out.
We should maybe disregard some of the things Kevin Durant said before the game and after the game, because I don't know how accurate they are. But what is accurate is this. Kevin Durant did exactly what he was supposed to do, what he needed to do, and what people who have watched him for the better part of almost a decade and a half now, 12 years, knew he could do. This wasn't, to me, the Warriors saying, drawing up a very specific, unique game plan to this. This was Kevin Durant taking shots that he had passed up in games one and two. This was Kevin Durant, despite saying, I'm not going to go out there and shoot 20-plus times, going out there and shooting 20-plus times.
Well, 20 wasn't in question.
He said,
30 was in question.
Well, he said, I'm not going to shoot 20 to 30 times. That's what he said.
Yeah, well, he was definitely trying to respond to the question. Mm-hmm. The 30 shots is out of question because that's just something that he doesn't do. So I'm not saying Kevin Durant didn't do what he was supposed to do, but when the coach comes up with a game plan, if we were doing the show and we were like, Nick, we're going to be heavy on Nick Wright in the A's and B's, you would know that you got to be able to do your job. And you could see that their game plan last night, and it was not the same as the first two games.
Yeah, so we're going to agree to disagree on that. Because Kevin Durant had the exact looks that he was passing up in games one and two, and he was taking them. He had those mid-range jump shots available to him early in the series. But he did what he's supposed to do. He was outstanding. He got two fouls within 90 seconds of the game starting. He could have gotten frustrated. He could have gotten mad at the refs. He could have. One of those fouls was super questionable. Credit to Kerr for leaving him in. And he was great. He was the Kevin Durant that we know exists and that we know can do this, not any night, because you can't be that efficient every night,
right,
but is a threat on any given night to go for nearly 40. Like, Steph was in foul trouble. Steph picked up his third foul midway through the third quarter. KD stepped up again. Steph picked up fouls midway through the second quarter, picked up his third foul. And then third quarter picked up his fourth. KD stepped up again. He didn't even have to play in the fourth quarter. He was great. He was the exact guy that Steve Kerr, when he gave his press conference, saying, I think Kevin's going to take 20 to 30 shots.
Be more aggressive. Be more assertive.
It's exactly what he was. And that's what he was supposed to be. So he can say it had nothing to do with games one or two. I don't believe that. Kevin Durant is as aware of the commentary surrounding him as anyone in basketball.
Right. I agree with you on that part. He was sometimes great performances are forced out of him.
Yeah.
And his team needed it. Boogie Cousins is hurt. So they had a couple days to be able to prepare. They're putting Bogut into the lineup. And if you look at, man, why is this series tied up 1-1? A lot was because of that time that they fell asleep in the second half. But they had to have a tremendous amount of confidence. They had a 20-point lead in game number one, a 30-point lead in game number two. So as we saw last night, they had another 20-point lead in the game. So I'm sure they had a lot of confidence. Every team is making adjustments. When you look to the third game of all these series, each team is making what you call a series adjustment. And this was one of the adjustments that the Warriors made, that they're going to go, instead of going through Steph, going through Klay, they were going through KD, putting Bogut into the lineup. So those are the things to me that were very obvious as far as the differences between game one and game two. Even though KD ended up getting the ball in some of the same spots that he got in game number one, how he got it, I thought, was very different, especially early in the
game.
But
I'm sure the Warriors never thought they were even going to have to get to the point where they had to make adjustments in the first opening round of the playoffs against the Clippers. How much of game two do you think was a wake-up call, if you will, for both the Warriors and for Kevin Durant?
Well, absolutely. You lose your starting center, and you blow the biggest lead in NBA playoff history. They came out in that first quarter with the playoff intensity, and they did what the Warriors have done so often over this five-year run, particularly the last three, which is they have shown the ability on both ends of the court clamp you down.
Yeah, that's important.
I mean, what
yes.
they did defensively in that first quarter, now the Clippers went on a little bit of a run to cut it to 17 at the end of the first quarter, but Draymond is flying all over the place, playmaking. You have Bogut is in there all of a sudden looking like the guy who just won MVP of his Australian league. Mm-hmm. Durant was doing it on both ends. Klay hasn't had a good shooting night yet in this series, but he's playing. The Warriors instantly became the world-destroying force they wanted to be. And when KD's hitting those 17-footers that aren't touching anything but the bottom of the net, net's barely moving,
right,
that when they play like that, nobody's beating them.
One thing I've seen with the Warriors, and I really respected the camaraderie that they have as a group. And even before KD got there, whenever one of their star players, when their guys in their core group struggle, they go out of their way. When Iggy was struggling, they went out of their way to get him back into a group. When Steph was struggling in the finals, before KD got there, they went out of their way to get him into the flow. We have seen with Klay, the way he started the season. Draymond, they have done these things. They did the same thing for KD last night. It's the sign of a great team, a great organization. One of the things that gets Nick upset is it's a luxury. KD don't have to play like this every night. When all the other top five players, when they have an off night, you end up losing. They get criticized. But KD has the luxury, because he's been in Golden State the last 3 years, I understand and respect that.
Well, and I want to say one thing, because I'm very critical of Kevin Durant for some of the stuff off the court. What he did last night was spectacular. He answered. He had scrutiny on him, unlike he's had at any point this season. The Warriors, for the first time all year, they weren't in a must-win game, but this was the highest leverage game they've played all season,
yes.
Right? The first game that if they lose, we'd be like, whoa.
Yeah.
And he was the best player on the court by a country mile. He was spectacular from the first moment of the game to the end of the third quarter when he checked out of the game, and they took total control back of the series.
There was one other athlete who had that pressure on them last night to step up in a big way for their team, and that was Ben Simmons for the Sixers. How was he able to lead his team to victory without Joel Embiid? That's next on FS1. You can always check us out on the Fox Sports channel on SiriusXM. We'll be right back after this.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Welcome back. We'll get to Ben Simmons and the Sixers in just a second. But first, Spurs, Nuggets, and DeMar DeRozan soaring past Nikola Jokic for the baseline slam.
Oh, Nikola Jokic getting scored on. What a shock. The Spurs are so impressive, man. What Pop does, this team might make the Western Conference Finals. They're unbelievable.
DeRozan averaged 25 this year, Nick, and 5.
Yeah.
First Spur in the history since Pop's been there to ever get those numbers. With all those great players.
That's wild.
Yeah, I'm still in your numbers thing.
It makes sense because the assists, because they're great players have been big, man.
Same game, Derek White jumping. Jumps the passing lane for the steal and the easy dunk on the other end.
Most impressive guy you didn't know about coming into the playoffs, it would be him.
And when they get DeJounte Murray back, that backcourt is going to be spectacular.
Oh, next year they're going to be nice.
Here we go, Warriors-Clippers. Kevin Durant denying Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at the rim.
I mean, just both ways. KD was so good last night. I'm sure he had a few more turnovers than he would have liked, but other than that, this was an A triple plus game for him.
On the defensive end, he was like the KD the first year of Golden State.
Trying to prove something.
All right, moving on. Nets and Sixers. No Joel Embiid in the lineup. No problem. Philly beat the Nets in Brooklyn 131-115 to take a 2-1 series lead. Ben Simmons led the way for Philly, 31 points, 9 assists on just 13 shots. After the game, a vindicated Ben Simmons.
I try not to pay too much attention to what's going on social media and what people are saying, just because people are going to say what they want to say. And I can't let that affect me on the floor. So I just try and do my job and step on the floor and run the point guard position as best I can. We have the pieces to get games, to complete games. And I think everybody in our organization knows that. It's about everybody stepping up and, following the plan, the scouting report, whatever it is, and just locking in and buying into what we have built in that foundation.
See, you were at this game last night. You also have been critical of Ben Simmons in the past. This is now the second game he's put together. This one, pretty dominating. How was he able to do it last night?
He was able to get to his spots. The one thing I've been most critical about is his shooting, but also the inability to understand I can't shoot. It's one thing for a guy to understand compared to a guy thinks he can shoot. So they were forcing Ben Simmons into taking shots that are not his strong suit. Last night, he didn't make a shot over 3 feet away from the bucket. I'm all about that, but he needs to be able to get to his spot. And it's not always in transition, as they had talked about before. He got some help from the offensive staff. They had some very good sets for him. But his overall mindset, and I believe that he benefited from Joel Embiid not being in the game. Because from the time I watched the warm-ups, watched it closely, watched the type of shots he took. But once they did the introduction of the starting lineup, he took over. He was the vocal leader. He was the most demonstrative, and that's not always something that he does. So as a point guard, he's still trying to learn the game, and he's going to have to try to find a shot one of these off seasons. But if he's going to play like that, get to his spot. Like, don't make people try to be a jump shooter. He's not a jump shooter yet, but you have to be so much on the case as far as I'm going to get in the lane. I'm going to be more physical, because when he does that, you can see that he's special. Now, just imagine if he could shoot from 10 feet. How much better would he be?
Oh, if he develops a shot, he will be a league MVP candidate, if not favorite, because he does everything else on the court at an A or A-plus level. He answered the challenge yesterday without their league MVP candidate, Joel Embiid. This is the second straight game now that Ben Simmons has been the best player on the court. This is the second straight game for the Sixers where they had to win it. You had to win game two so you don't go down 0-2 at home, and you had to find a way to come back and take home court advantage back against this Nets team to remove their hope of pulling off an upset. And that hope was increased dramatically when Joel Embiid was a late scratch. Joel Embiid was announced that he was going to be out 15 minutes before the game. And my pal Jared Dudley, his comments have been, we've shortened his quote a bit. It wasn't just shade he was throwing at Ben Simmons. He said he's excellent in the transition, he's averaging half court, and then he broke down his game more. I don't think Jared Dudley was trying to take a shot, even though that's how it was interpreted. But in the half court last night, Ben Simmons was 9 of 11. He was 11 of 13. Only two of those baskets came in the fast break, and they needed it. This team has not been good without Joel Embiid. Going into this game, they were 8-10 this year without Embiid. They're playing on the road. Think about that. You were at the game, see. I know people expected a lot of Philly fans to be there because it's a short trip.
Yes.
But that Brooklyn crowd, they've been waiting for this playoff, for this team and to this process, their version of the process, to pay off with a home playoff game for 5 years now. And they got it, and Philly, from the opening tip, took the energy away from them, and that was because of Ben Simmons.
Did Ben Simmons find his shot? Not that he found his shot, but he found open lanes. He found a way to work with what the Nets were giving him, or did he just happen to string together two good games? Like, are we going to see more of this Ben Simmons?
Well, Ben's got to be able to play this way for them to be a special team. But he's also going to need some assistance. He needs J.J. Redick to be special. And that's what Tobias Harris, for him to be special. If they continue to shoot the ball from the three-point line, it opens up the lane. So one thing that we can't miss in this Ben Simmons, he did get the offense started. He was very, very aggressive. But he had so much support. Tobias was outstanding. J.J. was amazing.
And
if they're able to spread the court, that's why it's so important for LeBron to get some shooters. Because if I'm going to be in the lane, the only way the lane is going to stay open is if I got shooters outside. So the combination of what they were doing was really, really special. You have to be able to give those guys credit. But Ben is a special, special athlete. He is not a true point guard, so he's still learning on the job. His skill set is set that he should be able to be a dominant player. But I'm not wrong that he can't shoot. I'm not wrong in that. And Jared Dudley, this is Jared Dudley's problem. There ain't too many guys in the NBA that he can guard. So when you can pick a guy who's an actual star, because Jared Dudley is old, non-athletic as they come in the NBA, can't play above the rim, I'll be surprised if he can barely even dunk the basketball. So if Jared Dudley can guard you, that is a problem.
Jared Dudley's out there. He's been in the league 12 years. In the last few years, he hasn't been a good player to your eye. He's there because he is one of the smartest players in the league. He's a great veteran for a young team. And Jared, again, I don't think was trying to take a shot, even though it was construed that way. But on Ben, can he do it? There's a reason that he won Rookie of the Year. And then there's a reason that he was the only All-Star from his draft class or the one after. There's a reason that he has been highly productive in this league already through only two years. Now, do you need him to be more aggressive? That was the difference between game one and games two and three. He was attacking downhill relentlessly. The other thing that was different in this game without Embiid, and you pointed out before the show, and I think it's a really good point, the way Brett Brown, the much maligned Brett Brown, used Boban. Boban is a giant. Boban is... might be the biggest person in the NBA. And the way they used him on just these little rub screens
yep.
to just cause a little bit of separation, because mm-hmm. Ben is so long, fast, and can jump so high, you get a little bit of separation. That's when you could see him going mm-hmm. to the rim from 7-8 feet out. Boban was a big part of that. And Boban also, all of a sudden, speaking of guys who can't shoot, Boban all of a sudden can shoot.
Oh, yeah.
He's a threat from 15 feet, which really changes the math for the Sixers. So this was a great win for them. They're without their best player in a game they needed to win.
Yeah.
And their most maligned player was spectacular for the second game.
It gives your best player a couple days to rest. Now they can right. make the decision in game number four. Do we rest Joel Embiid a couple more days, which would be really smart
and
by them?
I think it's on the board they rest Embiid for the rest of the series. If they rest him in game four and they win, they could potentially rest him in game five, try to have him fully healthy for the Raptors series.
All right, let's take a break. The NFL schedule is released this week. A lot of hype surrounding the Cleveland Browns. Can they live up to it? That's next on First Things First. Tomorrow is an MLB doubleheader on FS1. Coverage begins at 3 Eastern as the Pirates host the Giants. Then Cody Bellinger and the Dodgers take on Christian Yelich and the Brewers. You can catch it all on FS1. Also, the Fox Sports app.
Christian Yelich is just a remarkable story and a remarkable baseball player.
All right, time now for your AT&T wake-up call. That is the truth, Nick. The Warriors blew out the Clippers last night, 132-105. KD led the way with 38. CeCe, what'd you make of Kevin Durant's night?
No, he was special. He was very, very aggressive from the beginning. You could see why he's one of the most efficient scorers. I think in his first 25 points, I don't think he dribbled the ball more than 4 times in any of those buckets. Amazing by him. I'm glad Steve Kerr helped him out. Got him a couple screens by Bogut. Beverly didn't like fighting through that 7-footer screen. So, great performance by KD.
He was obviously the best player on the court last night, and he stepped up in a huge moment. And it was despite what I think the Warriors would have considered worst-case scenario.
Yes.
90 seconds into the game, he's got 2 fouls.
And a little ticky-tack one, too.
Right, where he could have gotten frustrated. Kerr, to his credit, left him in, trusted him.
Yes.
He didn't get in foul trouble from there on out, and he was great.
All right, Philly beat the Nets in Brooklyn last night, 131-115. They now take a 2-1 series lead. Ben Simmons led the way with 31 points, 9 assists on just 13 shots. CC, how impressed were you with Ben Simmons?
Oh, Ben Simmons was even more impressive than KD because we know what KD can do. He's proven that. It's not as if, oh, man, we got questions about KD offensively, defensively on the court. No, it's just a matter. They're so good, it's not pulled out of him. Ben Simmons is doing things that proven a lot of people wrong. For me, I like the fact that he got to where he can shoot the ball with his right or left hand, and that's 3 feet from the bucket. The coach helped him out with a couple sets, but he was very aggressive, took care of the basketball, played amazing defense.
Well, that's
the the crowd out of the game in Barclays Center.
5 combined steals and blocks to go along with 11 of 13, 31 points. When they tried to go to hack a Simmons at the end of the game, he knocked down free throws to make sure they couldn't have a comeback. And this without Joel Embiid. The Sixers, all of a sudden, thanks to back-to-back great games by Ben Simmons, have taken control back of this series.
All right, moving on to the Spurs. They took a 2-1 series lead with a big win over
the Nuggets.
Right behind Derek White's 36 points. Nick, were you surprised by this?
No, I bet on this, and I bet on them to win this series before the series began. The Nuggets are a great regular season team that doesn't have a superstar. They're going to need Jamal Murray to play like he did in the fourth quarter of game two.
Mm-hmm.
He, unfortunately, the other 11 quarters of this series, he hasn't been good at all. Jokic is a turnstile on D. The Spurs are better than them. And Derek White, though, is a revelation. He was supposed to just be a defender.
Yes.
Another great late draft pick the Spurs seem to have discovered and developed.
Spurs, after a disappointing postseason last year, Popovich has this group totally under the radar. But, Nick, the story is this young player. How they found him, developed him as a defensive specialist. Now at 6'4", no, he's a defensive specialist, also an offensive threat. They've never had a point guard as athletic as him. So it's very encouraging to see.
29th pick of the draft. Unbelievable.
All right, finally, the NFL draft less than a week away now. Dwayne Haskins' stock seems to have fallen in the last few weeks. There are rumors that his recent decision not to attend the draft, the only one of the top 4 quarterback prospects doing that, is tied to his recent slide on the board. Haskins, however, still confident in his potential.
I can't look at that stuff. It drives me crazy. But The biggest thing is I just got to control what I can control and keep getting better every day. And I feel like I can be a Hall of Fame quarterback and win a whole bunch of Super Bowls. So, I mean, whether the pain on me right now is the pain on me right now, but I have room to grow and I'm going to keep getting better. And not necessarily worried about what guys rank ahead of me or what guys rank behind me, because I'm going to be one of the best. So that's all I'm focused on right now.
Cece, why does something like this happen a week before the draft? How does a guy like Dwayne Haskins, how does his stock just drop?
Well, for one, there is no science to the draft. There is no exact way to doing it. There is no machine. There is no person that can look inside of a kid and wonder on this next step. Because we know when they went from college, from high school to college, they made that step. But there's only a few that can really make this next step. I tell kids all the time, parents all the time, the draft is about lane assignments. So we're going to run the 200 meters. The guys drafted in the first round, they in lane 4 and 5. They got the best chance to be successful, but you still got to run the race. And you can be drafted like myself in the 4th round and still beat them to the tape. So don't get caught up in the draft. There is no science to it. Why did Aaron Rodgers fall in the draft? Why did Dan Marino fall in the draft? Year after year after year, we have all these experts in everything that they say they're experts. They might be in a certain area, but no one besides Mel Kiper is an expert at the draft. And even Mel Kiper misses. So, no, I'm not surprised by the rumors of him falling. Every year, this stuff starts to happen. You know what happened last year? There was a quarterback that supposedly was the 3rd or 4th ranked, and then he ascended, and they were right about it, and his name was Baker Mayfield. So every year we go through this. When they declare for the draft, it's tear-down season. Let me tell you what these guys cannot do. If there's a quarterback that had the same season as Dwayne Haskins, and I wonder where they've been drafted, the kid at West Virginia, the kid at Missouri.
Or like, the kid at Duke.
If all these kids, which supposedly might pass him in this last draft as far as the evaluation. Imagine if they had the season that he had and Dwayne Haskins had the season that he had. Dwayne Haskins wouldn't be drafted in the first 2 rounds.
Right. So let's just show everybody what the 4 potential first-round quarterbacks, what their last season of college football looked like. Kyler, we think, is going to be the number 1 pick, so don't worry about him. Let's look at Haskins compared to those other 2 guys. Haskins is incredibly similar to someone on that screen. The guy that's supposed to be the number 1 pick. Those other, if you all of a sudden gave Drew Locke Haskins' numbers and Haskins Drew Locke's numbers, to your point, C, nobody's talking about Dwayne Haskins as a first-round pick. 63% completions, 28 touchdowns, 3,500 yards. He was at 70%. He threw for 50 touchdowns in the Big Ten.
Yep.
If Dwayne Haskins is actually plummeting on draft boards, I want to be very clear about this. It will be because of 1 of 3 things or a combination of 3 things. These reports, either lies, he's not plummeting and people are just saying it, incompetence, people don't know what they're doing, or prejudice. Because he's a big black quarterback and people, he's not the prototype. And you can say, we've come a long way. We have come a long way. You don't got to go to Canada anymore. But there is no chance, none whatsoever, in my mind, that a quarterback with Dwayne Haskins' numbers, career arc, what he did in high school, what he did when he filled in spot duty as a redshirt freshman at Ohio State, coming in, saving the day in the Michigan game, mm-hmm. and then setting every, not just Ohio State record, Big Ten record, wins at the level that he does, would all of a sudden, the kid from Duke is ahead of him? Well, Drew Locke at Missouri might be ahead of him? I refuse to believe it. I think it's got to be smokescreen that Dwayne Haskins is not going to be. He could have been the number 1 pick of the draft. Now all of a sudden we're saying he might be there at 13.
Well, you have to believe that maybe the Giants are spreading some of this. They'd love him to be available at 6. Let the world think maybe his stock is dropping.
I hope that's what it is.
Maybe it's misinformation. You'd like to believe that it's something like that so that he is available to them down there, because you know he's looking.
That has a lot to do with the draft. I would have more respect if people said something to the effect of, you know something? I don't like his throwing motion. You know something?
Or something about him.
I wish there was a skill set. All his interviews. Because I know the type of football. I know Ohio State changed their offense. And Ryan Day, the head coach there, his background is more in pro football of recent years than it is in college football. So I know he was taught professional football concepts. I know he can read defenses. Right. I know he's a great leader. I know he comes from a good family. I know he was successful at the highest level. Look at the top defenses that he faced compared to these other quarterbacks. No one, even the top Murray, can't compare to him as far as who faced more tough schedule and more tough top defenses. It would be Haskins. So for me, a lot of this, I don't get caught up in it because I know, just like Russell Wilson, what round he go in?
Third round.
Was there a better quarterback taken in that draft than him? So they miss all the time.
If Dwayne Haskins is selected after Drew Lock or Daniel Jones, then I will just, then the question I will ask is simply, how much does college football actually matter for where you're taken as a quarterback?
Right.
Like, how much, or should some of these guys just say, I'm going to go to classes and just work out and then wow people at interviews and at the combine? Because the games were played. We saw it. When we were done with the college football season, the question was, will Haskins win the Heisman? Is he the most obvious, prototypical drop back? We've seen it happen dozens of times in the NFL. This guy be successful. Now, a kid that had a mediocre year at Duke is projected to go ahead of him. I don't want to believe it. I can't believe it.
Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, the three guys who obviously dropped and turned out to
with
be very
respect,
successful.
None of those guys had a season in college football
like
the way
Dwayne Haskins
did.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the Cleveland Browns now. Excitement for the 2019 season seems to be at an all-time high. Cleveland has four primetime games this season, in large part due to stars like Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham, in even larger part due to their endless potential. However, their general manager, John Dorsey, said it's important for the team to stay grounded.
The type, I mean, that's what it is. Football's played in the fall, the last I've seen. Now you got to go to training camp, and you got to earn the respect that everybody's talking about. And how do you do that? You have 53 guys with the single mindset and the collectivism of driving this thing forward. And that's where it is. Games are won and lost in the fall, and that's how you're going to approach this thing. I mean, I've always lived by the mantra 1-0. You know, it's one game at a time, and you have to live that.
And CeCe, this has been the question all season long as they've bolstered this Cleveland team. Will it be able to live up to the hype of the Baker and Odell and the way they've really sort of made this into a playoff contending team? Do you think they can?
Well, this is what, if I was analyzing Cleveland and where the organization was, just on the mere fact of just some few things that I see. If Baker Mayfield was coming back for his second year with the same team, would I think Cleveland would be vastly improved? I've been like, yes. If what about Freddie Kitchens? Do they bring him back? Matter of fact, they're going to give him a promotion. He's going to run the whole show after calling the offense for the most part of last season. I've been like, okay, I'm willing to give him that chance. All right, what about the other players that they've added? They're going to get Kareem Hunt back after 8 games. Would Cleveland be better now with 2 running backs that could potentially rush for 1,000 yards? Yeah, I think they would be better. Olivier Vernon, traded for him from the Giants. Oh, someone opposite of one of the young premier rushers in pro football? Oh, I think that they would be better. Sheldon Richardson, they don't have a defensive tackle, especially someone that can rush the passer. Sheldon Richardson coming over. Oh, I think the Browns would be better. Demetrius Harris coming over from Kansas City, a really good tight end, spot duty type of guy. Oh, I think the Browns would be better. And then the cherry on the top, they happen to have the kid with the blonde hair. Right. So this is not all hype. I understand what Dorsey's saying, and Dorsey's trying to fight this.
Doing his job.
Yes, he's doing his job. And Odell Beckham is in the mind frame where he's going to have a great year. He's grown up an awful lot, not only last year, but in the last couple years, not because of the trade. He realized the trade is his reality. He realized Cleveland's his home, and he's going to make it work out there. So for me, it's not hype. Any team that was in the position Cleveland was in, I evaluate, do I think they're going to be better based on what they kept, the continuity, and then what they added compared to what they lost? The Cleveland Browns were a good football team at the end of the season. And they added not one great player, but they added several good football players that really fit some holes that they had.
You and I are in total lockstep on this. Let's just pretend for a moment the Browns had not added All-Pro Kareem Hunt, Pro Bowler Sheldon Richardson, Pro Bowler Olivier Vernon, All-Pro Odell Beckham. Let's pretend those guys never came on the team. What you have a team what you have is a team with a young quarterback who the second half of the year was by every metric one of the eight best quarterbacks in football. A team that went 5-2 to close the season. Mm-hmm. A team that over the second half in football had the number one yards per play offense in football. The number one red zone offense in football. On the other side of the ball, you have a future 15-sack, not 10-sack, 15-sack guy in Myles Garrett and a guy in Denzel Ward as a corner that could have won Defensive Rookie of the Year. So your two most important spots on defense, you have players that are only going to get better who are blue chippers. If they had not added Odell, not added two good front seven defensive players, not added Kareem Hunt, guess what? I'd think, well, Baker's going to be better. They're not going to have the clown show that was whatever's going on between Hugh and my pal Todd Haley. This is a team that should win at least 9, if not 10 games. You then add the most talented receiver in the league, an elite pass rusher, a D tackle, and a guy that won the rushing title his rookie year. Mm-hmm. You add all that, of course it's hype in this regard. We haven't seen him play a game yet.
Right.
So everything's prognostication. Everything is you've got to show it to me first. But the Browns would have been a sexy pick to make the playoffs if they had stood pat this offseason.
Yes.
Much less have what I would argue is the most aggressive, most successful, if you can have it, offseason anybody had.
All right, so yes, on paper, they are a team, and if they live up to their billing, they could be a very successful team. You'd have to anticipate there being pitfalls with these guys. They haven't played really together yet with all the new faces and with a new head coach. What are the challenges that lie ahead for them?
Well, one of the challenges is the overall sacrifice. Offensively, you only have one football. Defensively, there's not as many sacrifices that guys have to make. There might be some defensive tackles, guys that have to hold more for the run blockers or linebackers can run free so that a big-time sacker like Myles Garrett can come off the edge. But more of the sacrifice is on the offensive side. So this offseason becomes very, very important that they have realistic goals. Odell Beckham shouldn't be going for a career high as far as catches and yards and things because that might not happen. But he can still be the best player that we've seen in a very, very young career opposite Jarvis Landry and some of the other weapons that they do have. Kareem Hunt, when he gets back on the field, he will be hungry. He's from Cleveland. The incident he was involved in was in Cleveland. So he's got a lot to be able to prove in that community. And I just believe that Baker Mayfield is a special, special cat. Not only as far as a football player, as far as being a leader. And him and Odell has already started that bonding. Odell's there in the offseason. You're not going to have any questions as far as his buy-in to what they're doing. So, yes, they're going to have a little bit of slump. But the reason why I believe in them is because how they faced against Baltimore last year twice and what they faced in Pittsburgh. Now, Pittsburgh don't have all those weapons, and we know Lamar Jackson in Baltimore is challenged offensively. So, to me, this is not hype. They should be the favorite based on what's going on in Baltimore and what happened to Pittsburgh.
Excited. Got to wait a little bit, but I'm excited.
Yeah, I got my OBJ jersey.
Coming up, is KD vindicated after a monster Game 3? We'll talk Kevin Durant and the Warriors ahead on First Things First.
Had to do some stuff.
Steven Jackson is here. Good to have you here, Steven.
Man. Glad to be back. Glad to be back. How y'all doing?
Thank you.
Daily.
Take that. Let's talk daily. Some basketball.
Good Friday, man.
Good
Friday,
man. All. Both LA teams, the Lakers and Clippers, expect to be major players in free agency this summer. And while the Lakers have LeBron as a major selling tool, according to one agent, the Clippers actually have more. He added, the Clippers have stuff that sets them apart from the Lakers. Continuity, cohesiveness. They have an owner who will do whatever it takes that's possible. They have a nice blend of young basketball and talent with guys who are role players and excelling and thriving in their roles. If you're a star and you come in, they already have guys who know their roles. In other situations, you try to bring in role players and have to deal with role allocation and adjustments. I think any star would be a seamless fit with the Clippers. All right, Steven, I'll start with you. Are the Clippers actually a better free agent destination than the LA Lakers?
I wouldn't say better. I mean, they don't have LeBron James. That's not better. More opportunity, I should say. You know, you can get more guys. You can create more of a better team there and have more control of what's going on there. With LeBron, you're going into a situation where you have a star there already, the biggest star in the game, and he's already building something. So you have to come be a part of what he's building. You go to the Clippers, you can start from scratch. You know, you got a coach. You don't have a star there, so you can go there and be the star and start building from you. it's a great situation for a lot of free agents, you know, to go there because they have the money. They got a great coach. And like I said, they're on their way up.
They're making in the playoffs this year
already. They're in the playoffs this year. So it's a lot of pluses to go there, but not bigger than L.A., not at all.
Well, so I want people to understand, because Steven referenced it. They're going to have a max spot. They're going to be able to bring in one free agent. They maybe, theoretically, possibly could bring in two if they do it the right way. But as it is right now, what goes along with that is the team we're seeing right now on the court today, a lot of those guys are gone next year,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So Patrick Beverley is an unrestricted free agent. A lot of the continuity that we're talking about, they have these guys, that's going to change. Now, Lou Williams is under contract, a great contract, $8 million a year. So he'll be there. And Danilo Gallinari, he makes $22 million. He'll be there. And they've got Trez, who is a great bench player. Mm-hmm. They have him locked in. So you have the pieces there, right? But even though they're in the playoffs this year, what Steven said is totally correct. Do you want to go to a team and build something, mm-hmm. or do you want to go to a team and instantly compete for a championship? That's, to me, the two biggest differences between the Lakers and Clippers. If Kawhi Leonard goes to the Clippers, they are excellent, and they are building towards it. But Kawhi Leonard plus Lou Williams and Danilo Gallinari, in my eyes, is not a championship contender.
Might not be a playoff team in the West.
Well, I think I would disagree with that, but fair enough. If the Kawhi Leonard plus LeBron, you're a championship contender instantly. Now, some guys might say, I don't mind not being a championship contender for a year. We'll bring someone else in, mm-hmm. and when we are a contender, it will be because of me and what I built here. So that's not necessarily a negative, mm-hmm. but the Clippers are not a player away from competing for a title. As long as you have LeBron James on your team, you're always one superstar away from competing for a title.
One superstar away? Because it was on the board the last couple weeks. It could be a Kemba, or it might not be a
all-star.
Superstar
call it
that's
an all-star. I would call Kemba or better.
But would it be would the Lakers still be your choice, even though they are a franchise mired in dysfunction right now, as opposed to going to a franchise? I mean, if you did one of your blind reveals, Nick, and mm-hmm. you had both resumes and you didn't see which team was which, you know, the record, the head coach, the young core, the shooters, and you unveiled it, it would probably be the Clippers would be the team you would choose.
Well, this is the thing. This generation of basketball players, they didn't grow up in an era where the Lakers were champions and dominant. They didn't have Dr. Buss going out acquiring guys and how they used to take care of the Lakers. And a lot of people in the NBA, man, they used to take less money to come join the Lakers. Mm-hmm. That's how they've been able to do this for so long. So for the Clippers to be in the conversation, for us to pose the question, it lets you know how far the Clippers have come. Because when you look from an organizational standpoint, I think the Clippers are in a better situation. Steve Ballmer, man, he got second most money, right under God. He got a bunch of money. Mm-hmm. Jenny Buss is running the Lakers from a who's going to run basketball operation, how Doc Rivers lost control. Now they're a better organization. Jerry West is a senior advisor. Yeah, they don't have LeBron, but they got some major chips that would even let us have this conversation. Lakers fan base, very, very fickle, leaning towards Kobe Bryant. That's one of the only things. The weather, sunshine, the people, the stars, everything else is exactly the same. The problem in free agency is we got a couple guys that are introverts by nature. Kyrie Irving, KD, Kawhi. Why would they go to the Lakers with LeBron? So the Clippers seem far more appealing right now. And also, you got to judge the personality of the guys going to be selecting, Steve.
I think whatever coach the Lakers decide to hire is going to have a lot to do with it, too. Right now, a lot of free agents don't know who they're going to play for. Some guys have a relationship with Doc Rivers. Doc Rivers is one of those guys, when you play against him, you'll see 9 out of 10 times the opponent teammates go shake his hand because so many guys respect him. He's a player. They know he wants to win. So Doc will have a lot to do with what players go there. But the Lakers not having a coach, that'll kind of hold up what they got going on.
And they're
going
to get a coach, obviously. But whatever coach they get, it's not going to be Doc Rivers.
Right.
We know that. I like Ty Lue a lot. People seem to like Monty Williams. None of them are Doc Rivers. They're not. They don't have the longevity, the track record, the longevity, the relationships that Doc has.
They have the respect, though. Monty Williams has the respect.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, and Ty Lue has a championship.
And that's a lot in the game.
Absolutely. And Ty Lue has a championship just like Doc Rivers does. But I think Doc Rivers is almost universally considered one of the five best coaches in the league. To your point on the blind reveal part of it, if we did that, the Lakers have a lot of question marks. And we have to see what's going to fill in those question marks. Because before free agency opens, they will have a coach. Who is it? I thought something really interesting happened. Colin Cowherd and Sam Amick both seemed to be reporting yesterday something similar, which is that the Lakers are in hot pursuit of a high-level team president. So Colin said he's heard it's in place, just have to wait for the playoffs to be over. Sam said that they have a guy who is currently coaching a playoff, not coaching, I'm sorry, with yes. a playoff team.
Part of the front office.
Part of the front office. Yes. So is that Masai Ujiri? And does that help you get quiet? Is that R.C. Buford? Is that Sam Presti? Mm-hmm. Presti's the one that I find most likely because Presti might be feeling like in OKC, things have reached, you know, the water's reached its level to a degree. But so if they actually get a team president, not to rival Jerry West, but to give them some credibility, that changes things sure. as
and
well.
And also, watch for the general manager of Toronto.
Masai.
If he decides to come, it's going to be a package deal. So just watch for that. Because I know Kawhi is very, very happy and comfortable with everything that's going on in Toronto. And if he would happen to leave, why wouldn't he be packaging the prime free agent and bringing him?
The day Magic quit, the day after on this show, I started saying Masai Ujiri's name. I want to be very clear. It's not because I had some report, some insight. It was because it made too much sense for a guy who does like the spotlight. He loves those little press conferences they do mm-hmm. in Jurassic mm-hmm. Park, cursing, getting fined. Going to L.A. and all the things they've done for Kawhi, Masai's the one that put them in place.
Yes.
Masai's the one that traded for him. Masai's the one that's been massaging that relationship. So that, to me, would be, because of the Kawhi connection,
sure.
the home run for the Lakers. I wonder if he or Sam Presti or someone else are the team president that Sam Amick
It's not going to be nobody about. From San Antonio, I tell you that.
R.C. Buford never coming?
Sam Presti, that's San Antonio guys. I don't think Kawhi would go for that.
Oh, okay. Oh, Kawhi, as far as that part of it, sure.
All right, Steven, we'll see you a little bit later on the show. Coming up, would the Cardinals be making a mistake by trading quarterback John Frozen? That's next on First Things First. Back here, First Things First.
Them yearbook things aren't going well. You shouldn't do that.
We're going viral. Ben Simmons went off for 31 points. Went 11 of 13 from the field in the Sixers' Game 3 win over the Nets last night, which had Brooklyn fans eating a little crow. Before the game, a Nets fan posted this missing Ben Simmons jump shot poster outside Barclays.
All right,
missing. Have you seen his jumper?
And then identifying characteristics, it says just average. Last seen drinking in Orlando. That due to a now disputed report
yes.
that he missed a game against the Magic because he was so hungover. Please contact at the bottom. It says Kendall Jenner.
It's great.
Leave Kendall out of that, man. Kendall ain't her problem.
And then the reward.
Well,
see, you that's the entirety of his rookie contract.
Yes.
Well, Ben Simmons made them eat that last night, just like he did in Game 2. He was spectacular. But that's well done. It was right outside Barclays. I think I saw Chris Carter posting those up.
No, man, come on, man. Listen.
His would have been higher because he's taller. Back to the NFL now. Cardinals quarterback Josh Rosen has found himself in an awkward position, with many speculating he'll be replaced and or traded when Arizona most likely selects Kyler Murray, number one overall. Rosen hears the rumors, reads the papers, and gets that the situation, while a little awkward, is out of his hands.
I think the season probably went as poorly as it could possibly go, but within that, had an unbelievable time. I think when people talk about, like, you can't listen to criticism or don't ever read articles, like, you have to be aware of what's going on to a certain extent. So, like, I definitely understand the situation. I mean, it's annoying, but, like, it is what it is. Football is a business, and I definitely respect the higher-ups and their decisions. I think, like, the best advice I've ever gotten in life from so many different people is control what you can control. And whatever decisions are made, it's my duty to prove them right if they keep me and prove them wrong if they ship me off.
All right, CeCe, it's a question we've been asking for the last couple of weeks. Would the Cardinals be giving up on Josh Rosen too soon if they draft Kyler Murray? Did they see enough from him last year to say, oh, no, this is not our guy?
Well, this is the thing, Jenna. It's a perfect storm because if they're going to support the coach the way in the press conference the owner talked about, because he talked about Cliff Kingsbury, the type of offense that he ran, the type of excitement that it generated in the stadium, at the college team that he was coaching then, if he's trying to do that, then he's got to be able to give him the right, first time coaching the NFL, to get his quarterback. And I don't believe Josh Rosen is his quarterback. So I believe both of them can be right. I do believe they can be giving up on Josh Rosen too soon. But it's Kingsbury. It's his choice. It's his first gig. And if I'm more confident with one guy, I'm going to take that guy. And that's what's going to happen in Arizona. They're trying to do the best job they can as far as managing the situation. But there is a reason why Arizona has lost for a long time. I mean, there's a reason why they have so many double-digit loss seasons. There's a reason why a number of prominent, I'm talking about guys the best of their position, have gone there and didn't have the type of playoff success that they should have had in their career. It's because they made a bunch of mistakes. Not last year, not 5 years ago, over the last 30 years.
They've gotten it right once in the last 30 years, and when they got lucky on Kurt Warner. Kurt Warner looked like he was done. Kurt Warner with the Giants was a train wreck. The Cardinals took a flyer on him. Kurt Warner resurrected his career, and all of a sudden, all that talent you're talking about could shine.
Yep.
All of a sudden, we're like, oh, my God, we knew Larry Fitzgerald was good, but one of the greatest playoff runs we've ever seen from any player. Like, they had it right briefly, but it hasn't just been the quarterback mismanagement. But outside of Kurt Warner, they haven't had solid or above average quarterback play really any time before or after him in recent NFL history. Now on Rosen, I thought the last quote we heard from him there was great, and I give him credit for it, where he said, if they keep you, prove them right. If they trade you, prove them wrong. That has to be his mentality, and I think they are going to trade him. I think he will. Prove them wrong is tough because that is then tied to how good Kyler is. Because even if Rosen goes on to become a Pro Bowler somewhere else, if Kyler's a star, then nobody's going to think they got it wrong. And no one's going to criticize them for that.
Right.
And that's the way that I think Steve Keim and the people in that building would be justifying this. It's not that we were wrong about Rosen. It's that there is, they believe, a generational talent in Kyler, a special player that we've never seen, at least his measurables, in the NFL. And we hired a guy as our head coach who just got fired at his alma mater. For one reason and one reason only did we hire him. Because we think he plus the exact right quarterback can be special. So why would we hire Cliff Kingsbury, who is going to be an offensive coordinator in college, if we're not going to give him the best tool for his specific toolbox, which is a quarterback that fits exactly what he wants to do? That's why ever since they hired Kingsbury, you have seen this team tied to Kyler. I don't think it's an indictment on Rosen. I think it's about what Kyler would, they believe, would be under Kingsbury.
Well, I can't agree with you on that. Because he showed enough bad football that would allow the Kyler thing to continue. Because if the organization had seen that, man, he was a difference maker, he's a force multiplier, they can convince Kingsbury to be able to do that. But I think that they saw enough as far as when he was in the pocket, not good. When anyone was around him, when he couldn't step and throw, not very good. So if there were some question marks last year, what he ended up doing or not doing, it ended up turning, man, I need to be able to look at this. Because if Josh had shown me some traits that I thought were really special, you know what I would do? I would hype Kyler Murray up as if I was getting ready to take him, and I'd ship him off for a bunch of draft picks. But they can't do that. Because Rosen, man, I had question marks before they drafted him. And last year what I saw, especially when he had pressure in his face, man, he didn't look like the type of guy that I thought was going to be that difference maker.
Shouldn't they be doing the opposite then? Shouldn't they be sort of pumping up Josh Rosen right now as if he didn't have a bad year so they could at least get some from if they're going
to
get rid of him?
I mean, but to me, there's no real way to do that because you'd only be trading Rosen. He'd only be on the market if you're taking a quarterback number one overall. If you take a quarterback number one overall, you're definitely trading him. You can't trick people about what's on tape. And on tape, he wasn't very good last year. In fact, he was really bad. Now, I would argue with what has been graded as the league's worst offensive line, what was graded as one of the league's worst rushing attacks, I don't think Darnold would have been much better. I don't think Josh Allen would have been better. Baker might have been, but Baker seemed to be a head above everyone else in his class. I think Josh Rosen is going to be a good quarterback in this league. I do not think it's going
to
be with
the
Arizona
Cardinals.
All
you need to do is go back to the draft. All right? That's what Josh Rosen's about right now. Regardless of what football people saw on film, regardless of what people saw as far as him being able to do. If you like Josh Rosen, like Nick did before the draft, right now you'll make an excuse for him that you still believe this is going to happen because you believe he hadn't had enough time. If you had question marks about Josh, which I did before the draft, and then you saw him, and man, he was a deer in headlights a lot of times there in Arizona. Now I got enough football film that really makes my opinion seem like I know what I'm talking about. So go back to the draft. If you liked him before the draft, you, let's be more patient. If you had question marks before the draft, you're sitting back saying, hey, man, let's go with Kyler.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.